Hey, this is Josh Epstein from Junior Junior, and you're listening to Sound Session. I can't be everything you want me to be. I can't be everything you want me to be. Finally.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Sound Sessions. This is Michael.
And this is Kevin.
And just coming off of playing Space in Evanston in support of the Mental Health Awareness Spring Tour, the Detroit duo Junior Junior played an intimate Chicago show, which was fantastic. They have this really great thing going on, Kev. The band's actually donating a portion of each ticket sold to JED. It's JED, a nonprofit that works to promote and protect emotional health and prevent suicide among U.S. teens and young adults. And we have the great Joshua Epstein on with us today. Hey, Josh, what's going on, man?
Not too much. I'm really excited to be on your show.
We're excited to have you. So how's everything going with the tour so far? I mean, this is kind of a different approach to a tour that most bands take. How's the reaction been with the fans?
Well, you know, I think that we were kind of getting a sense the last time we went on tour, that was like during the whole election process, and we were kind of getting a sense that people were just a little bit more on edge than normal. So I think that we wanted to kind of do like a little bit more of an intimate tour in smaller rooms so that we could just kind of be in a room with people and like really get a sense of where everyone's at. So it's really been fun. We've just been playing for small spaces, and they've all been, you know, sold out and just a lot of fun. And, you know, we're just kind of not being bashful about trying to make it feel like we're in our rehearsal space.
Right on. It's so cool.
It's, you know, it's funny that you guys were just at Space, and then you talk about your rehearsal space and your space size of these venues that you've been playing at. Is there like a preference you have? I mean, whether it be a big festival or you know, a more intimate space like you had just mentioned?
You know, I think that there's such different experiences now thinking about it, because it's weird. We drove from Detroit to Chicago in the van, and, you know, because we're playing a smaller space, and obviously, you know, we still have to cover expenses, but like Dan and I are just not getting paid for, the band's just not getting paid like our typical fees for playing the shows, because we're donating so much of it to the JED Foundation. So we're kind of doing everything like the way that we used to. And it was so interesting to, like, after having been on a bus and, you know, not having driven myself to a show in a few years, but like have that experience of like fighting the traffic on 94 and then, you know, like showing up to a smaller place. But that, first of all, that place is beautiful, and I love playing there. But it's just a different experience. And, you know, I think, when you're used to playing that size room, it almost feels like there's a limitation there, and that when you get to a bigger space, you can do so many more things. And then, you know, once you've spent a lot of time doing some of the bigger stuff, you kind of miss the intimate feeling and just have different perspectives on how to better use the spaces and the situation.
Yeah, it all seems to come full circle, like, you kind of go through that
grass
system and everything. Right? And, you know, you put out the single Same Dark Places, which is fantastic and everything. Now, I heard that it can be kind of played in... Oh, I'm sorry. Let me go back real quick. 1 second. So you're playing at these intimate spaces, by the way, and you've been rolling in kind of bigger shows. You headlined Pitchfork back in 2016 in Tinley Park. You have all these great things going on. What kind of stuff do you do to keep yourself busy on these tours now that you're back in the van? I mean, are you guys going back to books and hamburgers with just ketchup and stuff like that?
you know, it's such a different world since we were last doing these van tours. Like I can just watch Netflix now on my phone and not really pay attention to it all. But you know, I've been trying to, I think that we live in a time when there's so much information accessible that you can almost kind of end up going through life in a coma. So I'm trying to read books and listen to podcasts and learn as much as I can these days, just because I think I've fallen guilty to falling into the like Netflix time suck of and losing like a week to, you know, the stupidest TV show you've ever watched in your life.
It's good to, I guess, kind of occupy your mind in a more productive manner. That's, well said. I want to get into, you know, like you said, you are donating a portion of the proceeds from each ticket sold to JED. Now, why was it that you picked this in particular nonprofit, JED?
So the song Same Dark Places was released in the Netflix show 13 Reasons Why, which is not a waste of time, and I would recommend people checking it out. But we just thought that since it's like a series that's covering really dark content and scary content, and it's primarily aimed at a younger audience, that it would be a little irresponsible of us to not try and do our best to destigmatize mental health issues and to try and let younger people, especially who are going to watch that show, know that there are ways to get help and that there's help available, and that, you know, it's not a sign of weakness to ask for help. So it just kind of all coincided, in a natural way.
Yeah, there's a lot of stigma that goes along with having depression or even speaking about your feelings or what you've been going through lately. There must be a lot of instances when you have people write to you or, people connect with you, especially teens, about their certain issues. What kind of advice do you give to these listeners and these fans that reach out to you?
Look, unfortunately, I'm not a mental health professional. I've spent a lot of time talking to them, but that doesn't make me one. And, so I would never want to, try and directly discuss anyone's problems with them other than to say that, if there's something that you're feeling that is, an immediate threat, it's always the right move to call 911.
Yeah.
And, it's just not a sign of weakness to admit that you need some help and to go try and find someone to talk to. And there's treatments that are available now that are so non-invasive. I'm on medication for anxiety. It's not a narcotic drug. It's not something that impairs any of my other abilities. It's just kind of like, it's like taking insulin if you have diabetes. It just kind of, helps everything.
Well, I think what you're doing alone, you're just already starting the dialogue, and that's such a big thing. I mean, like you said, there's a stigma. People don't want to talk about it, but I think the best thing you can do is talk about it. Now, I'm reading that maybe there was some sort of, and you even just said you kind of suffer from anxiety. Was there anything that kind of triggered this for you, or what made you, become so outspoken about this?
I think it was, a number of things. First of all, I was dealing with generalized anxiety disorder, which is like a really severe form of anxiety that it affects about 2 million people in America every year. But we were playing a show in Columbus, and someone in the audience yelled something, and I was so insecure at the moment that I just kind of like interpreted it as like a personal attack, and I got really upset, and I kind of lashed out at the crowd and made some disparaging comments about their city. And I just felt really bad about it afterwards because, those are people that are allowing me to come to their town and play a concert because they've paid for the tickets. And I have so much, I'm so grateful for that. And so to be able to, to realize that I had treated so many people so disrespectfully was just really worrisome. And I decided that I needed to figure it out. And it was the best thing that I've ever done, the best choice I've ever made. So I just wanted to, to share that with people and to, but, I think also it's just kind of where we're at in our country and in our culture. I just think everyone's like, has been hiding behind irony and humor, and no one really takes very much seriously, especially among younger people. And I just think that we've arrived at a point in our lives where, for me, I just feel like I can't hide behind any facade. I'm not, what am I going to do with my career and my platform if it's not like trying to do something good for anyone that I can reach? I don't necessarily see the value in trying to protect the longevity of your career by never talking about anything that's slightly uncomfortable and never giving people a reason to think any less of you.
That's a really, really strong point.
Yeah. I mean, it's big of you.
Yeah. Man.
Thanks.
Okay. There's a lot of things going on. Let's talk a little bit about music for a second. The last album you guys put out, the Junior album, was fantastic. You've been writing and you've been in this band for a little bit of time now. How do you guys keep it fresh? How do you guys keep this music going? Obviously, there's a lot of influence for this for your latest single came from the places that you kind of found with your depression and everything like that. Again, that single is Same Dark Places. But how do you guys what's the writing process like these days for Junior?
Well, I think the reason that Daniel and I work so well together is that there's always been this has always been like the most natural and easy creative partnership that either of us have ever had, in that both of us are capable of writing and producing and making our own albums by ourselves. And so having someone else that functions on that level, and I'm not saying that like musically we're both, you know, anything special, it's just that, you know, we both are on the same level in terms of how we think about composition and how we think about the approach. And so it kind of allows us to always be working on something. So one of us is always working on something. We're both always working on things, and we bring them together. And so this time, though, around, we realize that we have this touring band that's just, they're incredible musicians. They're way better than us. And we kind of naturally felt like we should, like they could add something to the music. And so this time around, we went to the Masonic Temple in Detroit, which is this like 114,000 square foot building that most of is unused right now. And we just wrote as a band and hung out and it was really fun. So the music sounds a little bit different now. It's like, it sounds a little bit more like a band, I would say, on this album. But I think that, you know, for us, the luxury that we've had as both having had other projects before that, you know, that toured and did things, is that, you know, after we wrote our first record, it wasn't like, how do we recreate Lightning in a Bottle? It was like, okay, cool. We've been writing albums for years. We're not going to run out. It's what we do. You know, I'm a songwriter, and more than anything.
Yeah. Well, I want to kind of go back to like early Joshua Epstein to kind of just, I guess, to flash forward to see, you know, what brought us here today. So I want to know about your first concert that you remember, and then the first album in your mind that really kind of had a, like, struck a chord with you.
Sure, yeah. First concert I remember was the Grateful Dead. My parents were Grateful Dead fans, and they took me to the Grateful Dead when I was 8 or 9.
Wow.
And, yeah, I remember just crying because the smell of marijuana was something I didn't know, and I hated it.
I can see that could be kind of an issue, sure, at a show.
Yeah, so that was the first concert that I remember. The first album that I remember actually like impacting me was interestingly enough, like one of the Alvin and the Chipmunks covers the Beach Boys albums or something. It was like something that had been like passed down from like, you know, some of my cousins when they were little, and like they had these Alvin and the Chipmunks, and I remember hearing the Beach Boys, like the Alvin and the Chipmunks version of Beach Boys songs, and asking my dad like who wrote them, and then he was like, what the hell are you doing listening to this? I'm gonna play you the Beach Boys. And then I remember getting Pet Sounds, and that was like the first album that I really fell in love with.
Yeah, you know, that's really, I can see a little bit of Brian Wilson and Junior's music. I mean, it's like, as far as like the harmonies and that beat goes. So, do you find yourself going back to listening to those same kind of albums to get you know, just to jog the memory a little bit these days?
You know, I it's funny because everyone's always asking me like, what are your top 10 albums of the year? And mm-hmm. I just feel super irresponsible as a musician that like I don't really care about anything other than like the Beatles and the Beach Boys and Leonard Cohen and Randy Newman. Like, that's just what I listen to still.
Yes, Randy Newman name drop. I like that.
Well, we've actually talked about this on Sound Sessions before, that, you know, keeping up with new music, and I mean, you know, Junior being new music to a lot of people at times, it can be a tough thing. You know, you really have to actively seek out bands to listen to, and I mean, it's a fun thing to do, but it's still kind of a, you know, a task at times.
It's fun. It's also like, you know, it's like, for example, yesterday I went to a writing session for a pop artist who will remain nameless, and was in a room with, you know, a couple people trying to like help write a song for them for like 12 hours. And you come out of that thing, and like the last thing you want to do is listen to someone else's music. So I just find myself like listening to podcasts or mm-hmm. talk radio or, you know, whatever, because it's like, now that it's my job, it's like, I love listening to music, but, mm-hmm. you know, there's just like, you have to have an interest that's not music.
Sure. Well, you know, to kind of play off that still, I mean, you just said you were with a pop artist. Is there any maybe guilty pleasures, maybe like a Fergie or you know, I don't know, anyone else that you maybe you don't want to tell people you like to listen to, but you actually like to listen to?
You know, to me, there's no such thing as a guilty pleasure.
I agree. Thank you.
I agree.
And I think that, like, what the one difference between, like, that to me that like makes something pop is like a level of simplicity, but that doesn't necessarily imply that it has to be stupid or bad. And right. So I think that there's, if there's something simple that holds up on every level, under every level of scrutiny, Like, for example, the lyric, "Reach out and touch face." Simple lyric, you can interpret it however you want, mm-hmm. but like on the highest level of scrutiny, if you took that to a poetry professor, they'd be like, wow, there's a lot there, that's a lot to unpack. So I think that, to me, I would just try and be involved with pop that does that, and, you know, hopefully, like, that means that I'll never get into, like, talking about popping bottles or what kind of car I drive, because that just seems so unimportant, even though I drive a sweet Cadillac and I'm the only man under 50.
Well, I will say also there is, you know, I think it takes a certain skill to be able to write, you know, a catchy, good pop song.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's also tough to get out of your way, you know. I spend so much of my time, like, intellectualizing the process that sometimes, like, it's hard to accept that something could be good that's just, like a momentary realization.
Right on. So, you know, you mentioned the fact that you're trying to stay busy doing all these things, and obviously you wear a lot of hats when you're not writing the Junior albums. How long have you been writing songs for other people and being a lyricist and everything?
I have not had another job since 2008.
Wow.
So since 2008, I've been yeah,
dedicated been individual.
Yeah.
So we're talking. So you're doing junior, and then you're also like studio musician on the side.
I'm not a studio musician. I'm a jack of all trades, master of none. In terms of if you wanted a studio musician, you would never call me. But I can definitely help with, you know, every other part of your song making.
Very multifaceted.
Yeah, absolutely. Good.
That's great. So, you know, you played here in Chicago. I saw some of the Facebook posts that you had written about, you know, the city and how great that space is in Evanston. What are some of the things you like to do when you come back to the city of Chicago? Or in general, you like any city. Is there like a certain, you know, key points that you need to hit when you travel around?
Yeah, I mean, I love eating food. So, I stayed there one time in the West Loop and just, like, ate at a lot of restaurants. Like, I think I ate somewhere, I forget the name of the one place, but then I ended up going to the Girl and the Goat after and then eating, like, a second dinner.
Oh, yeah, that's good stuff.
Which is, as Louis C.K. calls, a bang bang. So, yeah, I just like to go around Chicago and eat. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I took Potato to the aquarium last time we were there, my dog, and he actually had a panic attack because he made eye contact with a shark, and I have it on video. It's awesome. But that's a great aquarium.
I didn't know that could happen.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
The dog.
I didn't either, but yeah, like the shark like swam by, and in the video you like see them make eye contact, and then Potato has like a hyperventilation thing where he's just like panting so hard I had to take him outside.
Did you say Potato?
Potato, yeah, that's my dog's name.
I love it. My cat's name is Chicken.
Well, Potato and Chicken should hang.
That's what I'm saying. That's right.
My iguana is named French Fry.
Yeah,
So, you know, for some of our listeners who are listening right now, they might know you better from, you know, your first incarnation, which was Dale Earnhardt Jr., fantastic name. Obviously, when you came onto the scene, everyone was like, who are these guys? What is this name about? It was very popular. And then you switched over to Junior, very recently. What made the switch? I know I'm sure you probably have told the story 100 times, but just for our audiences, what made the switch to Junior to cut off the Dale Earnhardt?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, you know, for us, like, naming the project never seemed like that big of a deal. We just didn't, mm-hmm. we didn't really think about it too much, and it just kind of felt, like, funny. But then, you know, I think that the premise of naming your band in a jokey way as we then, you know, grew up a little bit while in the band, because this band started as an accident. It's just been 7 years, and it just, like, turned into our jobs. And so then all of a sudden we're finding ourselves, you know, growing up and wanting to talk about more serious things and finding that every time we put out music, everyone wants to talk about, like, yeah. Are we Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s son or are we, you know, and it's kind of just got so cumbersome and tiresome to have to explain the band name. And we also thought that, like, after album two, it would go away, but it just wasn't. We're like, every single time we talked to anyone, that was what they were talking about. And so the decision to just be Junior was to kind of, like, take that band, like, the name had become like a member of the band. We just wanted to, like, take that member out of the band so we didn't have to talk about it anymore.
That's a good way to do it. Just chop them in half.
It's funny too. We've talked to Minus the Bear, and you know they were of the same mindset too of naming these goofy songs, and they had almost the exact same thing that you just said. It just became such a dialogue that it was just tiring for them.
Yeah, it's like, you know, the second album, I felt like we had made like kind of a serious album, and then like even within our record label, because you know they're trying to sell a product, and so for them it was like, let's get you guys with Funny or Die. Let's get you guys, you know, and like, I have a good sense of humor. I like comedy, but like, I'm a musician and I don't want to be evaluated creatively based on my comedy because I'm not a comedian.
Right.
And so, you know, that was kind of part of it. Like, if this is like leading for people to want us to make comedy, then it's probably the wrong direction.
I did want to know, you said that you mentioned that you've been playing music since 2008 and kind of it's been dedicated like that. What was the jobs that you had before you were a musician?
Well, I always had a band, so mm-hmm. I was always doing that, but I delivered flowers, I worked in a warehouse for a little bit, like, kind of climbing up on ladders and like scanning things so that everyone would know what the inventory was, just like stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, just kind of Joe Jobs, if you will.
Yeah, I never got lucky enough to be a bartender. I tried.
It's hard.
Yeah, that's like,
that is so funny.
Yeah, that's it's the ultimate one. And I tried, and I remember I like interviewed with this guy at this like dive bar near where I lived in Detroit, and the guy's like, okay, how do you make a sex on the beach? And I said, I don't know, but I can Google it, and you know, I'll be able to make it in a second. And he's like, no, you're not gonna be able to have Google. People, you know, they come in, it's just not gonna work out. And then I went to the same bar a week later, and there was like a young attractive girl behind the bar, and she had obviously gotten the job. And so I went up to her and I was like, I want a sex on the beach. And she's like, I don't know how to make that. But you have to know. And she's like, no one here orders anything other than like Jack and Coke.
That's ridiculous.
That's not fair. You know, that brings up a good point because, first of all, the bartender is like the sexiest of all the jobs. I mean, you get to meet people, meet cool friends and everything like that. But, Kevin, tell me if I'm wrong here. Don't you find that, you know, the jobs that you have, I mean, you're a musician. I played music as well. I've been in bands. That when you're working these meaningless jobs and you're like, get me out, you know, and waiting for 5 o'clock to come around, almost like helps you build that creativity you need in later on.
Your mind is elsewhere all day. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And that's, you know, I think that's a problem that a lot of like successful musicians and artists have is that, you know, all of a sudden, like, you have to figure out how to make your own schedule and keep yourself busy, which is, you know, which has been a part of our coming into adulthood in the band and like,
yeah.
Realizing that, you know, I need to stay creative all the time, or it's, you know, it's like a muscle. It's, you know, it's like it can get off.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Josh, when you're not, you know, playing music, I mean, I know you said you got a dog and you like to try new food and you Google how to make sex on the beach. When you're not doing all that stuff, what are you doing on your downtime?
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't have any. I don't know.
Sure. I get that.
yeah, I don't know. I love comedy, so I'm a big comedy nerd, and been spending time with comedians lately and thinking about, you know, maybe taking a stab at writing some sort of TV thing or
cool
something like that. I don't know. Yeah.
Wow, really? Now that's pretty sweet. Have you? I heard you kind of mention this in passing. Have you seen that new Aziz Ansari's Master of None?
I have. Well, I haven't seen the whole thing. I saw the first season and second season. Now I saw the first episode, but yeah, I really love that. And I think, you know, some of my friends are involved with the show Love.
Oh yeah,
really.
Another
great.
Good one.
Great show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, that's
yeah, you know,
the path.
So it sounds like, you know, you've really done the thing. You've done the whole, you know, starving artist to successful musician, now even looking into other avenues. When, you know, when people ask you if you have any tips for these up-and-comers, what do you tell them?
Oof. Wow. I think that, you know, it's almost like music is a game of attrition. And, you know, if you do it long enough, eventually you're going to find your way, I think. But, you know, most of the people I started with just started to do other things at a certain point,
yeah.
And never came back to it. But I also think, you know, for me, it's like, it's, I don't necessarily think that it would be smart for me to try and become a pop star in the vein of like Justin Bieber, but like, damn if I wouldn't want Jeff Tweedy's career. And, you know, I think just being like a creative, thoughtful, reflective person, you know, trying to put yourself in places where, you know, other opportunities come along also, like, you know, working with comedians or working with trying to write a musical or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, that's awesome. Just say yes.
Hi, guys. We have time for one more question. Sorry.
Oh, great. Yeah, we were just going to wrap it up.
Okay, awesome.
Thanks. All right, well, that was Joshua Epstein. He is the thoughtful, always hardworking, great member of the band Junior Junior. He's going on tour right now, the Mental Health Awareness Spring Tour. He's donating a portion of each ticket to JET, which is a nonprofit that works to protect emotional health and prevent suicide among U.S. teens and young adults. What a great, great thing.
Really cool.
I couldn't have enjoyed this conversation more. You can catch them on tour. Their next stop is May 20th in Austin. Josh, thanks so much for joining us here today on Sound Sessions.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.